interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National earthquake.
Secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it. We go in the field to investigate. Here's one that caught my eye. I thought you would find this interesting. From the great state of Louisiana, where I was not too long ago, I thought this was just, it's weird on so many levels. Apparently right now in Louisiana, according to this news report, some Christian-oriented schools are teaching kids from a biology textbook, Biology 1099, and apparently there is a chapter about dinosaurs. And if this is accurate, what I have in front of me, it actually says, "Are dinosaurs alive today? Scientists are becoming more convinced of their existence. Have you heard of the Loch Ness Monster in Scotland? Nessie, for short, has been recorded on sonar from a small submarine, described by eyewitnesses and photographed by others. Nessie appears to be a plesiosaur," end quote. The curriculum also includes things like, here are some headings. "The second law of thermodynamics disproves evolution. No transitional fossils exist. Humans and dinosaurs coexisted. Evolution has been disproved. Solar fusion is a myth. And a Japanese whaling boat found a dinosaur." Now, the point to all this is we know that Christian curriculum and scientific ideas about evolution have long been at odds for one reason or another. But I've never seen a situation in which a Christian textbook is actually referring to a paranormal phenomenon like the Loch Ness Monster in order to justify their opposition to scientific theories of evolution. This is where science, religion, and the paranormal have met in a very funky way. And I can't imagine how confusing that must be for a child. But nonetheless, just something to keep in mind when you see the influence of the paranormal becoming normal, and even in places you would not expect. That's why the world is getting so darn weird, as we are going to dig deeply into tonight. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulkan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations, and my producer and engineer tonight Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening.
Good evening, Joshua. Now, what I want to know is, does that book also subscribe to the theory that the Earth is only 5,000, 6,000 years old?
That's the impression that I get. And in a lot of these types of books and philosophies not only include this idea that the Earth is only 5,000 or 6,000 years old, but that everything was sort of created at the same time, and that
right.
men were saddling up dinosaurs and riding them around. And you know, I would think most sane people think that's hilarious. And yet, I have seen museums out there devoted to these types of creationist philosophies where they have statues showing dudes on top of dinosaurs, riding
so
them like a horse.
Flintstone-esque.
Yes, absolutely.
Mr. Slate at the gravel pit using the dinosaurs to move gravel around.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, I am all for people having complete religious freedom. But don't confuse that with scientific evidence, things that are physical, that don't matter really so much in terms of one's belief and opinion. I mean, do you want a doctor to be conducting surgery on you because that doctor is looking at factual results versus having some belief system interjected
right.
into how, you know, you're going to be healed? I'll stick with the facts if possible.
Yes, sir.
So but, you know, it's just odd to me that there was a time when a lot of people who were faith-based would say, oh, the paranormal's a bunk, but now even something like the Loch Ness Monster is being embraced. But hey, you know, we're from the South. We live in Billy Graham land. For those who are not around here, we're broadcasting out of Asheville. And, yeah, that's true. You know, I just saw a note. Maybe the dinosaurs explain how the pyramids were built so easily. That makes the task a little easier, dragging some stones around. But, you know, Billy Graham lives right down the road, and there are churches on every corner, and it's wonderful for everybody to have, you know, a spiritual outlook on life. And yet there are these types of conflicts that continually arise around here that I think you don't see so much in other parts of the country, big cities and so on. Shelley Wright, investigator Shelley Wright, you have grown up here in Asheville.
Yes.
You're very much a local girl.
Yes.
And so you've seen this sort of philosophy play out over the years.
Yes. But in Asheville, things are different than in the surrounding counties. In Asheville, they believe in anything.
Well, that is interesting when you get right into the heart of downtown Asheville, you know, a very liberal-minded place, whereas it's surrounded by a lot more traditional, conservative, traditional, what's the word I'm looking for? People who are more of a fundamentalist mindset. And
mm-hmm.
in fact, one example of how outstanding that Asheville is this big, huge party we throw once a year called Bel Share. And Bel Share happens in July. And, okay, Asheville, it's an eclectic little city. And you and the I think the actual population of Asheville is around 80,000 people. So imagine some of the havoc that can ensue when for one weekend out of the year, hundreds of thousands of people.
Like 300,000 people.
At least.
At least.
Figures have been higher than that, like closer to 500,000. They come pouring in to downtown Asheville for one weekend of partying. This is our little version of Mardi Gras here. And usually people have a really good time, and I kind of have gotten to where I try to avoid crowds. It's a little bit claustrophobic to be around that many people. But anyway, we have this huge party every July. It's the largest outdoor street festival in the entire Southeast. And 14 years ago, from this upcoming Bel Share, on I think the Saturday, right in the middle, somebody lit the Thomas Wolfe House on fire. Now, Thomas Wolfe is Asheville's most famous author. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. And his house is an icon in downtown Asheville. Somebody lit it on fire and almost destroyed it. I mean, it was a major, major effort to rebuild it to the point where it is now, where it looks, it resembles how it used to look. But this is one of the biggest unsolved mysteries in the area. And a little later on in the show, we're going to talk for a few minutes with a man who is, he's a friend of mine. He's also, he's a writer, a researcher, a newsman who's been working with the authorities, and he is putting a whole new effort and new energy into this case to, you know, inform the public about what happened and give us an update on what they've learned. And I don't know what rewards are out there or whatever, but I thought this was a very noble cause for us to get behind. And there is a ghost aspect to this as well that we'll talk about. So, and, you know, maybe at Wright's Coin Shop there, Shelley, I mean, you have a lot of people going in and out there. Maybe you can start, you know, picking up some tips for us, right?
People like to come in and tell me things.
Yeah, that's right. Now, keep in mind, you can go to speakingofstrange.com for a live chat during this program. More information on topics discussed and links to, you know, weird stuff we in general are exploring. You can go to the official Haunted Asheville Ghost Tour website, hauntedasheville.com. Check out our Facebook page, Twitter, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, here's one thing that's very disturbing. Every week we talk about what, for lack of a better word, you might describe as the zombie apocalypse. And I have never personally been like a big zombie fan, but the reality is we get these stories that are pouring in now week after week about people who are eating each other. That's basically what happens. They flip out and they kill somebody, or they almost kill somebody, and they start eating parts of them. And I've got, you know, this stack of news stories about people who are flipping out and doing this stuff. And before I get into that, we have discussed how that some of these people are taking this drug called bath salts. Turns out the guy in Miami who ate the other dude's face off was not taking bath salts. They've done an autopsy, and they said he did have some marijuana in his system. And we know marijuana doesn't make people do that. So this, who knows? It was not, you can't just blame this on a drug. But again, we've talked about, like, what exactly is this bath salt thing anyway? Well, I looked it up. And here's basically what I found. The origin of the name bath salts is unknown. However, these are white crystals that resemble legal bathing products like Epsom salts. Okay, but we're not talking about the same thing. We're not literally talking about bath salts. These things have got all kinds of different weird drugs, amphetamine, methylone, methadrone, all this kind of stuff. But it's 10 times more addictive than cocaine. These things can be smoked, snorted, or injected. And when we come back, I'll tell you a little bit more about what these are and then read you some of the news stories about these people who are attacking and eating each other. And the spookiest part of all, how that this phenomenon is becoming popular. There are people, I believe, who are doing it now because they've heard about it and they think it sounds cool. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. Keeping you company tonight, thanks for joining us. It's called Speaking of Strange. We'll be right back after this. Over halfway through through 2012, speeding toward that fateful singularity, December 21st of 2012. Things are accelerating so much now that I don't even feel like I'm really preparing to do this show the same way I used to, because now stuff is happening so quickly that as I'm coming into the studio, I mean, emails are just pouring in and stories, I mean, my phone's ringing and texts are, I mean, it's almost like I should just be sitting here 24 hours a day reading a live stream of information that's coming in. It's almost like as soon as I say something, it's old news already, because so much other stuff is happening so quickly. It's a chain reaction that is going to climax, and none of us really knows exactly what's going to happen. We don't know where this is leading. All we can do is hang on for the ride, and that's why you listen to this show. It's called Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You keep hearing about bath salts as this generic term for some variety of drugs that appear to be little white crystals. They look like Epsom salts and things that you might bathe with, but it's not that. It's just a mix of things that are produced in laboratories. Again, you can smoke them, you can snort them, you can inject them. They cause hallucinations, paranoia, violent behavior, heart attacks, kidney failure, liver failure, suicide, and an increased tolerance for pain. And apparently bath salts cannot be located by a dog, like a police detection dog, or in urine samples. So it makes it very, very easy to hide. Also, distributors can camouflage the drug as everyday substances like fertilizer or insect repellent. So we know in the case of this guy who ate this dude's face off in Miami, he apparently was not on bath salts. But a lot of other people are taking these things, and it's creating the same type of result. In fact, what I find really disturbing is that it appears that after news reports of these attacks relating them to bath salts, all these articles have hit the press that bath salt sales have hit an all-time high. Now, I'm not sure how they track this sort of thing. I'm sure they have informants on the street. But why would you hear stories about people saying, this makes me this dark, crazed, depraved, suicidal, paranoid, cannibalistic animal, and say, I got to get me some of that?
Wow.
I mean, I've got a whole list of things here. I mean, another one from Florida here. We'll start early tonight. Florida man on drugs got naked, barged into his girlfriend's house, bit a chunk out of a man's arm and ate it, and then powered through several cop-deployed taser probes before finally being tackled and arrested. Just some of the allegations against this guy who is being compared to that Miami man. They say the guy was visiting his children at his girlfriend's house, allegedly high on an unknown substance, when he started yelling, throwing furniture around the home, and taking off his clothes. See, that's the thing. When they start taking off their clothes, that they're about to flip out. He was going wild, tensing his body, screaming. Now, this one, let's see here. Listen to this. This is from Waco, Texas. Another one of these zombie-oriented stories. A man, high on one of these synthetic substances, they say, turned into an animal himself. He stripped down, killed, and ate a 30 to 40-pound dog. Says he, quote, got down on his hands and knees and chased a neighbor while barking and growling like a dog, end quote. So he began acting like a dog, running around here, and it says he took he leapt onto a black dog on the front porch of a neighbor's house, beat and strangled it, and then began to, quote, bite into the dog, ripping pieces of flesh away and eating them, end quote. That's according to a police sergeant in Waco. When officers arrived, they found that he had, quote, blood and fur around his mouth, end quote. And, you know, I could sit here and read on and on. Here's another one, Charleston Gazette. Dude kills a goat, okay? Quote, police say an Alum Creek man, high on bath salts, killed his neighbor's pygmy goat, and the neighbors found him in his bedroom dressed in a bra and panties next to the dead animal. The bra and panties he was wearing, well, look, I'm not even going to go further with that one. It's not the dark 30 hour yet. It's hard to avoid it these days. In fact, you know, there are a few things that I am going to wait for the dark 30 hour to read, but here's one from Dallas-Fort Worth area. A woman attacked a guy. She dropped to all fours, starts acting like an animal, digging in the ground like a dog, and then it says she began eating dirt, and then she jumped on a man and began biting into the man before they were able to tackle her and restrain her. I have just pages and lists of these stories, and the similarities are, okay, we know it can happen to men or women. They may or may not be on bath salts, but they're usually on something. And, or at least it appears that way. Maybe we can't wrap our heads around the fact that people have reached an evolutionary point of flipping out like this, so we have to say, well, they must be on something. You know, that's the only way we can justify it. They flip out, they start screaming, then they get naked. Then if you see somebody getting naked, run. Once they get naked, then they get down on all fours, they start acting like an animal, and then after that, you've got the equivalent of, you know, we'll say a 200-pound animal, like a bear or something, that's coming for you. And you're not used to looking at people like a werewolf or something. But this is what's happening. And, you know, a lot of it, I don't know why this is, it seems like a lot more of it is happening on the eastern side of the United States, whatever that means. Shelley, you look like you want to say something.
I do. So what happens when these people, when this wears off, whatever it is, a few hours later, day or two later, when they come to and they're rational again, I guess they're rational again, what happens then? Do they show remorse? Are they glad for what they did? Do they remember anything?
Well, obviously, in some cases, like the guy in Miami, you know, they had to kill him.
Right.
But I don't see a lot of follow up on, like, do these people sober up the next day and be like, oh man, I have a headache. What did I, you know, like the Hulk? What did I do last night? I haven't seen a lot of follow up along those lines, so I don't know. It is kind of odd, but here's a story from Bangor, Maine. Apparently in Maine, some of the authorities are taking this so seriously that they have already had some exercises here to literally figure out what they would need to do to fend off, for lack of a better term, a zombie apocalypse if this becomes widespread. Because right now, you know, obviously there is not a real outbreak plaguing tons of people. This is very rare for this to happen. But first responders and emergency services, they converged there. They did a training session on how to respond to an epidemic if it spread through Maine. In the mock situation, disease, chaos, and yes, the walking dead took over. And they just say, hey, you know, it's odd, but there is a CDC webpage on preparing for something like this, if there is, and you say, why would this be embraced by authorities if there wasn't a chance? If they didn't know something that we don't know,
right,
about a possibility of something happening in the human brain here that could make people flip out. Now, I will tell you personally, I know this year is a stressful year, but I've seen people really agitated and irritated just on like a personal level, people that are usually very reasonable. So if you magnify that effect to people who are already on edge, yeah, I can see why that this could get really bizarre. In fact, we're going to take a break. Tonight we're talking about, I mean, we're trying to get this tiger by the tail. We're going to catch up on just crazy news happening all around the world. When we come back, I've got one for you from Virginia about an interesting room service call that a hotel received. A story about leprechauns, I kid you not. Hey, it's the program where the unusual becomes usual. We dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. Keeping you company tonight, I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. Shelley Wright's mind here, because during the break here on Speaking of Strange, I brought up the real CDC website so that she could see for herself. The CDC has a whole section about the zombie apocalypse. Shelley, you saw it with your own eyes.
I did. I am shocked. I am amazed. You would never think you would see something like that on the CDC's webpage.
And if any of you listening doubt what we're saying, do this for yourself. Go to the CDC, search their site, go to Google, type in CDC, whatever. There is a guy who wrote this particular piece. He is Rear Admiral Ali S. Khan, MD, MPH. He is an assistant surgeon general and began leading the Centers for Disease Control's Prevention Office of Public Health Preparedness and Response in August of 2010. And his list of credentials goes on and on. He's the real deal. In his career, he's focused on bioterrorism, global health, whatever. Again, Ali S. Khan is his name. And he personally wrote this on the CDC website. The headline is Preparedness 101 Zombie Apocalypse. And I'm just going to read a little bit of it here. It says, there are all kinds of emergencies out there that we can prepare for. Take a zombie apocalypse, for example. That's right, I said zombie apocalypse. You may laugh now, but when it happens, you'll be happy you read this. And hey, maybe you'll even learn a thing or two about how to prepare for a real emergency. And then there is a brief history of zombies.
With pictures.
Yes, with pictures of zombies. And he talks about New Orleans voodoo, Haiti. He even mentions, like, the Resident Evil game. Goes down there to better safe than sorry. You know, here's what you're going to need. 1 gallon of water per person per day. Food, you know, stock up on non-perishable items that you eat regularly. Medications, tools and supplies, sanitation, hygiene, first aid. I mean, it breaks down specifically, says here, if zombies did start roaming the streets, CDC would conduct an investigation, much like any other disease outbreak. CDC would provide technical assistance to cities, states. Well, I mean, this is absolutely real. So you can look at this and you can be like, this is just some really silly little hip stunt the CDC is doing to try to show that they're up with the times. But government agencies really don't have much of a history of doing that, do they?
No. No, they don't. They're stodgy, and yeah.
So, you know, conclude from that what you will. But you know, the CDC headquarters are in Atlanta, right? So
yeah.
They're just, we are 4 hours away from Atlanta, where we broadcast here. So obviously, you know, again, however you take that, there does appear to be some potential here. There's a plan in place, shall we say, to have to deal with this. People have been acting increasingly weird for a long time. Story from Virginia says here at a nice hotel there, a nice inn, they got, I guess it's called the Old Town Inn, room service got a call after 2 a.m., late night call, from a guy who ordered up a nice selection of things. But then they realized that room had not been rented out. So they went to the room, and they found that there was a man in the room. Apparently he had broken in just to order room service. Can't blame him. At least he had a reason. Says he was charged with unlawful entry and public intoxication.
Public intoxication? He was in a room.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how you'd justify that one. From Seattle, Washington. Headline. Man is beaten by leprechauns for dancing. And you read this, you're like, what is this talking about? What do you mean? It says here, quote, a bunch of leprechauns beat me up, end quote, the bruised and bloodied victim told police. Police say they received reports about the fight around 1:55 a.m. When they arrived, they saw numerous people running from the scene. The man was on the ground, covered in blood, holding his head, screaming in pain. Police asked the man, what happened to you? And he said, quote, it was a bunch of leprechauns. They were mad because I was dancing with a girl. End quote. He told police that one of the assailants was wearing a white tank top, but he didn't know how to help the police find the leprechauns. A witness there said, there was a group of people beating him up. Police have not been able to locate the leprechauns yet.
But the search continues.
The search continues. I hope so. I hope they're doing their due diligence and finding the freaking leprechauns. Let's see here. Port Charlotte, Florida. We are really getting started early tonight, aren't we? Woman took a taxi cab to a racetrack gas station, and then she came running out a few minutes later and said, go, go, go. She had a bag with $320 in it, and she did not visit the ATM. She just took a taxi cab to go in there and rob the store. That's from NBC Miami. And hopefully she's in trouble now. Oh, yeah, she was arrested. Okay. In the UK, the government there has spent $48 million on a supercomputer they believe could make forecasts of the weather 100 years in advance. The meteorology office in the UK has boasted that it's $48 million supercomputer will deliver accurate results a century ahead. Of course, a lot of critics are saying the money would have been better spent getting tomorrow's forecast right. That they have had one problem after another predicting basic weather from day to day in central London. So this is being investigated right now to see how this money has been sent. Obviously, taxpayers are not impressed at this point, but what a bold statement that you could predict the weather 100 years in advance. I mean, that seems impossible.
Well, I mean, who's going to hold you accountable 100 years later if you're wrong?
Yeah, well, it's true. It's like, you know, I went into this restaurant one time in town, and they had gift certificates you could buy. And actually, I guess it was more like a bond or something that would mature. And so you could buy the bond for like $25, and they said in 100 years, it's going to be worth like $25,000. And so I asked the guy who owned the place, I said, so are you serious? Like, if I buy this for $25 and my grandkids come in here in 100 years, they're going to get $25,000 for this? And he said, I don't know. I'll be dead then. Who cares? So I thought that's maybe a good business plan.
Have yourself a gimmick.
I'm not sure that's legal, frankly.
Why? I mean, you can back it up with your business at the time. Or right now, I mean, back it up with...
Can we just run around selling pieces of paper for $25?
If someone buys them, sure, why not?
And say, I mean, come back in 100 years.
Phrase, let the buyer beware.
I don't know. Maybe we'll try it out. Somebody probably will now that we're talking about it. It's weird. Hey, listen to this. Fidel Castro, you know, he's an old man now. He's no longer the president of Cuba. What a life this guy's had, though. He's one of those last legendary renegades left on the planet. And Castro, he's been writing some of his sort of memoirs and things like that. And apparently a Cuban filmmaker named Octavio Cortazar recently spent some time with Castro, and then he's making a movie about, I suppose, Castro. And then he went to Puerto Rico to talk about the production he's working on. And this guy claims that Castro has told him, and I'm reading this as a quote here, he said that years before the fall of the Soviet Union, Fidel had traveled to Russia and the Soviet authorities had taken him to a military base in which there was a special laboratory, and they showed him there a UFO, a spaceship, a disc they had captured, and the body of a tall extraterrestrial being that they kept preserved in a special box-like machine similar to a cryogenic freezer, end quote.
Cool.
And you know, that's somehow believable to me, that if anybody's going to get to see an alien that the Russians have, it would have been Castro during, you know, that period of time before the fall of the Soviet Union. And you know, I mean, how much credibility do we give Castro? But why would he say something like that? Well, you know, why would he just make that up?
He has nothing to lose.
Yeah, nothing to lose or gain.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. You know, we're going to keep following this, especially if he has gone on camera and talked about this. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're just going to continue just boom, 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 trying to get just somewhat caught up on the crazy, crazy news that's happening all over the world. And soon it'll be hour two when we'll get an update on a local unsolved mystery. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange.
You hardly ever saw Granddaddy down here.
Sit away. Does an angel contemplate my fate? Do they know the places where we go when we're gray and old? 'Cause I have been told that salvation lets their wings unfold. So when I'm lying in my bed, thoughts running through my head, and I feel that love is dead. I'm loving angels instead. And through it, oh, she offers me protection, a lot of love and affection. Whether I'm right or wrong, and down the waterfall, wherever it may take me, I know that life won't break me. When I come to call, she won't forsake me. I'm loving angels instead.
Hey, welcome back to the final minutes of hour number one on tonight's Speaking of Strange. We have a lot more great stuff coming up for you this evening. And, you know, I was reading a story recently that just stood out in my mind that I felt I would share with you. One of those interesting little tidbits in history. It's about a man named Henry Stimson, and you've probably never heard of Henry Stimson. He was born in September of 1867, and he was born in the North, so you have to remember the Civil War ended in 1865, so he was born right there toward the end, or right after the end of the Civil War, in Massachusetts, to a wealthy family. He was raised well, educated well. And when he was in his 20s, he met a beautiful young woman named Mabel and decided to marry her. So Henry and Mabel wanted to do something really extraordinary for their honeymoon, especially since they both had some wealthier families, and they figured they'd do something crazy, go somewhere nobody else had gone, so they decided to go to Japan. Now, you can imagine in the 1890s, to go to Japan from Massachusetts, I mean, that's a gargantuan prospect. You have to get on a ship. Who knows how long that journey took just to get there, and then once you're there, you know you're going to stay for a while, and then you come back. So they got on a ship, Henry and Mabel, and sure enough, they sailed all the way from Massachusetts to Kyoto, Japan. Got there, found it to be a beautiful place, were amazed at how friendly the people were, and they just had a great time. When Henry got back and began, you know, continuing his career there, he became a successful lawyer. He eventually became involved with politics. Now we fast forward decades into the future, all the way up to the year 1945. World War II is still raging. And at this point, Henry Stimson, who's now an old man, is the Secretary of War. That's right. Henry L. Stimson was the Secretary of War in World War II. And his opinion meant a lot to people. So one day, President Harry S. Truman came to Henry Stimson, and he said, "We have decided we're going to drop these atomic bombs and obliterate part of Japan. We have to. We're going to drop these bombs on probably two cities, Hiroshima and Kyoto." And Henry Stimson said, "We can't bomb Kyoto. I had an awesome honeymoon there." And they said, "Okay, we'll do Nagasaki instead." Now, this one guy, this one dorky little out-of-place American, went on a vacation, went on a honeymoon somewhere. Those people in the town of Kyoto had no idea that how they treated that man on his vacation would determine whether or not, a few decades later, their city even existed anymore. And it was that one guy's experience that nobody could have ever imagined would have those kinds of implications, that not only determined the fate of the people in Kyoto, but also history, world history itself. So the point behind this story is that, you know, especially this year, when things are moving at a fast pace and they seem chaotic, you just can't know the long-term impacts that the little things you do may have. There's no way to imagine, to comprehend, how being nice to one person or being considerate of one situation might actually affect you, your family, your friends, everything around you, and maybe even shape world history. Epic matters of life and death. The big picture is the same as the little picture on many levels. And so it's a lesson. It's a lesson for us from history. And, you know, as much as I'd read about World War II before, I'd never seen those pieces. I didn't realize until I began, you know, looking deeper into why they bombed those cities that I saw part of the rationale. Amazing story. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about one of Asheville's great unsolved mysteries. Who burned down the Thomas Wolfe House? I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the program where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. Don't touch that dial.